You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The 2024 United Nations Climate Change Conference, commonly known as COP29, concluded in the Azerbaijani capital of Baku last week. This year's climate change conference was particularly controversial, with the host, Azerbaijan, being a major oil producer, with almost 2,000 lobbyists from the oil and gas industry attending, and with many small island nation states in attendance, objecting to the conference's $300 billion financial agreement to help them address the impacts of extreme weather events. White host Otto spoke to Bronwyn Hayward, a professor of political science and international relations at the University of Canterbury, to discuss the outcomes of the COP29 conference and the new quantified goal in climate finance that came from it.
So to start off, was the recent COP29 summit in Azerbaijan an effective medium for addressing climate change and extreme weather events?
I don't actually think it was a great medium, but the trouble is that these COP talks or conference of the parties where countries come together and have been doing so since, well, for the last, we've had 29 of them now, since 1995, I think we began. It's our vehicle for bringing the world together to think about climate. And if we don't keep talking, we are really in trouble because we don't have very many other diplomatic ways of making progress. So while it's extremely frustrating to have these meetings, particularly when they're headed by oil states and when they're organised by UN rules of unanimity, which means that one country can block progress, I think it's important to remember that if we hadn't had these meetings and the agreements that they create, things like the Paris Climate Agreement, we would have been looking at a far higher rate of climate warming, up around 5 degrees, which would have been just unimaginable. As it is, we're still in a very serious situation. We're still looking at about 2.7 degrees of warming over and above what it was like back in the 1880s when we started using lots of fossil fuels. So these meetings do make a difference, but they are not a perfect mechanism by any means.
Is this consistent with previous COP talks, or has the forum gradually become more ineffective at addressing climate change with each new iteration?
I think it's not so much that the forums are ineffective, although they certainly have major problems. But in my experience, I'm just only a virtual observer of COPs, but I have served on the IPCC in defence for science reports. Internationally, we're seeing growing polarisation and deepening divisions. And so the meetings over the last 4 years where I've had to present evidence and defend have become increasingly fraught and difficult. We're seeing the emergence of very strong nationalist blocs, in particular the bloc around the oil states and emerging economies, particularly Brazil, Saudi Arabia, Russia, China. Then we see the US, and then on the other hand, we've got the alliance of the small states and the group of developing nations, and the tensions between these groups are becoming very deep. But that's not confined just to climate. Climate is something where everyone can observe it, but we are seeing around the world, and particularly against the backdrop of wars that we're seeing at the moment, this really deepening tension internationally.
It's estimated that almost 2,000 lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry made an appearance at the conference. Why have lobbyists from such an industry been given a platform to speak at an event held to address climate change?
That's what everybody wants to know. I think that one of the points is that the lobbyists don't necessarily always have a platform to speak, although that is debatable. When you've actually got the events hosted by an oil state, then we've already got problems. And there's been huge debate about whether Turkey or Australia will host the COP after Brazil. It seems to be the latest strategy of the oil states is to try and take control of the meetings. So the UN really needs to make sure that these meetings move between the global north and the global south, which is what they're supposed to do. At the same time, there is a huge push in the international community to clean up who's in the meetings. And I think it was about 1,700 oil and gas and fossil fuel lobbyists were estimated to be in the meeting rooms. Now, whether They're not actually necessarily speaking publicly, but they're negotiating, they're putting pressure. They're larger than the small island states' delegations. So this is really a huge problem. And for the integrity of the process, I think we actually do need to look very carefully at the rules. There were slightly fewer lobbyists this time than there were at the last COP that we had at UAE, but still it isn't acceptable that you've got vested interests who want to continue business as usual. So trying to find a way in which we can ensure that the people in the room represent a range of views, that the meetings are transparent, and that they're not dominated by lobbyists is a problem. Because just banning the lobbyists would mean also that other civil rights groups who are there to watch and understand the process and keep accountability would also be excluded. So there needs to be some really careful negotiation around that.
Can you tell us about the new quantified goal in climate finance and its role in helping smaller island states to withstand extreme weather events?
Yes, so this was known as the Finance COP because it was aimed at trying to increase the amount of finance that would be spent for poorer countries, developing countries and the small island states who are on the front line of climate change to support both their mitigation efforts, although they really make such a small contribution, most of them, to climate. It's also around their protection and adaptation. Now, in the end, the UN made a rush decision to at least get something off the ground, which has been highly contentious, and they've agreed to try and spend and invest $300 billion every year until 2035 in climate adaptation, which at one level sounds like an eye-wateringly large amount of money. But when you think that here in New Zealand, the cyclones that we had in Taurapati, Gisborne, and Hawke's Bay cost $3 billion alone, then you can understand why many developing countries are saying that $300 billion a year is not even going to touch the sides, because countries around the world are having these large events, and each one is around $3 to $5 billion. And we know that once we go over 1.5 degrees of warming, in the next 100 years, we're going to see an increase where communities are exposed to four times the rate of these severe weather events. So they're asking for at least $1.3 trillion worth of investment. Now, again, the difficulty also is how does that money come? Because if that money is paid, no matter how much it is, if it's offered as a loan on commercial terms, then that's only going to trap countries that are already struggling in debt further. And it's something that a lot of finance industries are really keen to encourage, but this is not something that New Zealand or many of the small Pacific Islands want. They want the funds to come in the form of clean grants that can be spent to support communities, not in tagged loans that trap communities in debt.
So lastly, what needs to be done to make future COP talks more effective at addressing climate change?
I think that groups like Gen Zero, youth voices around the world, and governments, but particularly the civil society, can argue quite hard that the integrity of these processes needs to be enhanced. We need to think about how we have virtual observers and observation, but fewer people on the ground actually lobbying. We need to think about the unanimity rule so that we rethink the way in which countries like Saudi Arabia at the moment are able to block progress. Just simply by disagreeing. We need to think about who's hosting those countries and the principle that we enable the Global South and the Global North to share that hosting needs to be brought back. Those would be really simple, transparent things that could be done where civil society can lobby their own governments very hard for that. But I think the other thing is that actually having the presence of protesters who were saying, look, no deal is better than a bad deal, that in itself kind of raised the temperature in the room. It reminded international governments that they could fail here and that would have catastrophic effects. So recognising that the UN has a real role in terms of keeping people together, that we actually have to bring our best game to these events, I think there's a kind of a thing that we forget as people on the outside of these processes watching them, that our voice can hold the UN to account more than we think, although it is a really difficult time at the moment. And when people are watching wars unfolding, the incidents in Gaza, for example, unfolding, the incidents between Israel and Gaza unfolding in the background, the incidents in Ukraine, and feeling really helpless, these kind of UN forums become another important venue in which we, while we're talking at one level about climate, we're also talking about a more just and better world that we want. And I think that the global civil society has made quite significant inroads in the UN talks and should continue to push for better processes.
That was Bronwyn Haywood, Professor of Political Science and International Relations at the University of Canterbury, talking to us about the recent COP29 conference in Azerbaijan.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.